just out of the ordinary. So seeing a bobcat is out of the ordinary. I've actually been blessed to see two bobcats yesterday after seeing one on Friday. So as often as you don't see one, I've seen three in 2 days. So we're going to look at Elijah and Jesus today, maybe. All right. Brief overview of the outline. We're going to start out in Mark 9. We're going to look at on a high mountain. They're going to hear him. Elijah must come first. It's the transfiguration is what it is. Then we're going to end up with a little bit from Matthew 27, 45 through 50. Will Elijah come? 60-second story, in case you want to leave, or whatever. Because he did not die, in 2 Kings 2:11, we know that Elijah went up in a chariot of fire. And because he was named by the prophet Malachi in connection with the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, Malachi 4:5, Chuck covered that last week, right? Yep. The prophet Elijah was never far from the minds of the Jews when they considered matters pertaining to eschatology, the theology of death and judgment. So anyways, Chuck? Is he in chapter 3 too? No, by name, just by prophecy. Okay. I hate missing class, but the lad is leader, so. It makes it more difficult if you miss class 1 week and you got to follow up with that. Matthew 11, 13 through 14, if we're going to start. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John, and if you are willing to accept it, he is Elijah who is to come. So like I said, Chuck taught the class last week that led the class to look at John the Baptist filling the role of Elijah predicted by Malachi. And Jesus himself used these words. Jesus declared it. The verse from Malachi 4, 5, and 6. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and to the hearts of children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the land with a decree of utter destruction. So anyway, Elijah will come before the great and awesome day of the Lord. So Mark 8. That's really what we're going to kind of pick up, 27 through 28. Jesus went on with his disciples to the village of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they told him, John the Baptist. And others say, Elijah. And others, one of the prophets. So yet, when Jesus asked his apostles who people thought he was, even though Jesus had said that John the Baptist was Elijah, when Jesus asked his apostle, who people said he was, what was some of their answers? I asked the simplest questions. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'd purposely do it, but... So who did the people say he was? Elijah, even though he just said John the Baptist was Elijah. So that was one of the possible answers. 29 and 30, and he asked them, but who do you say that I am? Peter answered him, you are the Christ. And he strictly charged them to tell no one about him. So just in case we got somebody that's missed it in our whopping class of 5, 8 people, who is Jesus? It's Christ. Yeah. I hate to say someone might have missed it, but sometimes somebody hasn't made that mind up. They haven't, I don't ever know who's in here or whatever. So put that question out there. Peter says, you're the Christ. This is the first time in Mark's gospel that they call him that. This is the first time that he's referred to as the Messiah. He's just so to clear up the 8th chapter before anybody makes that statement. Moving on to Mark 9, verses 2 through 4. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, led them up a high mountain by themselves. He was transfigured before them, and his clothes became radiant, intensely white, and no one on earth could bleach them, as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. So how long was it between Peter's declaration that Jesus was the Christ and this time of transfiguration? How long had it been? 6 days. It's not been very long, has it? Less than a week. I don't know. It just kind of struck me that the first time they call him the Christ, and then within a week, transfiguration is a big moment that happens to really drive that home, I guess. So, Chuck?
Also, when Peter says who he was, he says, bless you, but you didn't figure this out on your own. The Spirit is the one who goes to do our lives.
Okay.
So,
Yeah, I can see that. I can see him trying to reason things out rather than listen to the Spirit, rather than let... Yeah, it's all new. He's a fisherman. He's a fisherman, to be honest. So any of this stuff, if you see something weird, what's it take to figure it out? What did I see? What exactly did I see? That's the case with accidents, with acts of terrorism and stuff. The eyewitness accounts, they vary. People don't even know what they saw until later, and they try to figure it out, sort it out. So Peter's in that same kind of sense, situation. What does transfigured mean? We've all heard of the transfiguration, but what's it mean? What does transfigured mean? Change? Yeah. Why don't they use a word like that? I mean, the Doug Standard Version, I would use a word like change. Transfigured is just a strange word to use. I've never transfigured anything else. Have you transfigured anything? According to vocabulary.com, which is usually my best place to go for definitions because they're usually a little bit out of the ordinary. This time it wasn't. But it says change completely the nature or appearance of. So I guess it's not just a change, but it's a complete change. What's nice about vocabulary.com, if you've never used that website, not only does it give you a definition, but over on the side, it gives you recent uses of this word in the press. So it'll have, this was used on the Washington Times on this day, and it was used by CNN on this day. So you can see that the word's still in use and how things will change. The words will change over time, and you can see that usage that way too. So there are people still using transfigured, although I wouldn't use it for anything else. So what kind of change does Jesus undergo? Is it his nature or is his appearance? Probably just his appearance then, right? It's a declaration, but I mean, like you say, he's already been preaching. He's the same guy. He's already got the same role. So it's really just a change in how he looks.
There's a lot of things that we can see in the Old Testament that show us things that are going to occur in Christ. I mean, think about Moses, and he came down from the mountain at a very similar situation as far as the following.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, he did. So yeah, I guess this fits right in there with it, doesn't it? So what's the most noticeable change to Mark? His clothes. How white are they? Brilliant white, yeah. It says in the English Standard Version, it says his clothes became radiant, intensely white, as no one on earth could bleach them. As no one on earth could bleach them. I think some other versions say, as no one could launder them, or as no launderer could do. So that's impressively white. I've seen some white whites. Hotels, for instance, for some reason, get stuff absolutely white. With their towels and their sheets. But I think any of us own anything white, you can't keep it white. So, anyways, that's how white it is. It's more than anybody could bleach it. In Matthew 17, verse 2, similar account, Matthew records something that he saw. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. I guess actually Matthew and Mark, neither one saw this. This is their account. Was it Mark's account probably came from Peter? Is that right? And Matthew's account would have just... Matthew would have been... It was Peter, James, and John, but he was an apostle, so it'd probably been... He would have got it a lot quicker than Mark would have got it. And Mark wouldn't have got it till at least the book of Acts, that time frame. So what did Matthew record as something... Face shone like the sun, yeah, like in Revelation, you're right. a lot like that. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Within moments of using it, learning to get soil one way or another. So I'm sure that they would have come down and expressed what they saw.
Yeah, well, you're right. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, the whites that they would have seen, whether it's in cloth, I don't even know how they could make, probably couldn't even make pure white cloth. We see white all the time, not only in cloth, but I got a styrofoam cup that's white. White paint is very popular. The Defense Department loves white paint for some reason. You'd think it's all green, but a lot of it's white. Yeah, we see white on a regular basis, but I hadn't thought about it. You're right. They probably really hadn't seen much white.
We use white in our work to help identify problems with machines. We need a machine white as a leaking oil and it shows up very quickly.
Yep. That's true. Yeah. There you go. I like that. It's as pure as you can get. No dirt, no oil, no nothing. Who appeared with the transfigured Jesus? Elijah and Moses. And why do you think they appeared here? Why those two? Why anybody at all? Moses represents the law, yeah, and Elijah represents the prophets. You're right. So that's probably why they appeared. And I think that's the key to this. I've looked at Transfiguration a lot. I've heard, not a lot, but I mean, over the years. I don't know. I mean, we hear about Transfiguration from the pulpit once or twice a year, right? Yeah, sometimes more. Sometimes, I don't know. I can't really say that it's always made sense. It just...
Well, it's interesting because Moses did die. Elijah did die. Mm-hmm. But both of those individuals talked with God.
Yeah, they both talked with God. No.
People are talking about dreams, they reveal things like that. There wasn't a dialogue that went back and forth like there was with Elijah and Moses. And I think Christ was looking for that. I know where I'm going, but I need someone who's there to talk to people about where I'm going. Back to me. That was the man in him that he needed that. He needed somebody who had been close to God when they were here.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, with his own relationship to God, as a man now, his own relationship would have been a similar relationship, a closeness there, and would want that. I could see that. I could see that. They've been through it before. Even like I say, Elijah, although he was taken by God with the chariot of fire, Moses was buried by God. You know, when Moses died, God buried him. You know, that's kind of strange.
And also, Elijah and Moses both showed the power of God, showed the blessings of God, showed God was God to the people, and they still doubted.
Oh, yeah.
He's about to go through tremendous doubt and denial. And I would maybe
Yeah, there's a lot of comfort in that.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to even have the disciples, except for John, basically take off. Peter kind of stayed close, but he did deny him.
There is. There's a lot of, there would be a lot of comfort in that, because as much as Moses is revered by the Jews, like you said, at the time, Why'd you bring us out here just to die? And he fed us, at least, in Egypt. You know, Elijah, he prophesied, but how many, you know, did they listen? No. All the prophets are that way. But, yeah, you're right. You can probably find a lot of comfort in that. I know I find a lot of comfort in the book of Luke, reading through that. How many times people ask Jesus, you know, if I was you, I would do it this way. And he goes, you're not me. Yeah. You're not the Son of God. And sometimes I know I find comfort in that from the many times that people said, if I was you, I would do it this way. I said, you're not me. As a soccer coach, I hear that a lot of times. If I was you, it's like, dude, you won't even bring your kid all the time, let alone show up 3 times a week and put up with all the drama that goes with teenagers on a soccer team. So, yeah. You're right. If I was in his place, if there was anybody I'd ever want to be with, even though this doesn't seem to really record any kind of interaction between them or anything, those two would be good choice on that. Good choice. Beyond the symbolism that we see with it, with just them. Okay, who's missing?
I'm thinking about David, because at the time,
it's the law, the prophets.
David focused on the lineage of David.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth. And even the apostles, the 4 gospels, are so focused on Christ setting up the earthly kingdom that they have problems seeing the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see that, you know, David's not brought up in this group, I think about the fact that, you know, I believe it's 2 Samuel, that where the people are demanding a king, and God's telling Samuel, don't count this as you, they're denying me, or they're
right.
Denying me,
yeah,
as their king, because I am supposed to be the king.
I am the king.
And so is God purposely leading out the kingships, because that's not what was important?
Yeah. No, you know, but that's a good point. And I went from when you brought up, is there who's missing? And David came to my mind too. But I know we have the books of law and the books of the prophets, but there's that books of poetry or wisdom in the middle too. And David's key to a lot of that he would represent that too. Yes, it is a little different though. I didn't think about it. Chuck? The guy that got the original promise. The promise is about to be fulfilled. Yeah. Many, many years ago. There's a lot of them that you could take, what is it, Hebrews 11? A good scene would be, this, you know, if the movies are going to do this, if Hollywood decided to do this, they would have everybody from Hebrews 11 right there on the mountain. They'd have to add that. Yeah, the cloud of witnesses. It's so great, a cloud of witnesses, yeah. So, yeah, it's 12. There's a really good study on that, and I've bought the book probably a dozen times, and I always lose it for some reason. But anyways, there's a really good study that on the So Great a Cloud of Witnesses. So how do you think Peter, James, and John felt at this point? They walk up a mountain with this guy, with Jesus. They recognize who Jesus is. They know he's the Messiah. But as they go up on this mountain, something absolutely bizarre happens right in front of them. You know they weren't expecting this. So how do you think they felt? Actually, I think it says in the next verse. But how do you think they felt? Scared? This is what it is every time people see an angel, right? They're scared to death. I know we talked about Luke chapter 2 in the I teach the, I don't know what it is, 3rd through 6th grade class on Wednesday night. And I had them look at that. We're going through the gospel, but we're going through right now, who is Jesus? And we got to that part, and they had never thought about somebody being scared of seeing an angel. But the shepherds were frightened. So that was just an angel. You see this all happen, yeah, it'd be pretty spooky. Yeah, they had no idea at all. Yeah, I mean, even the pictures that we have, the pictures from the Renaissance and stuff like that, people have drawn. Do you think Jesus looked like that? No, probably not, you know? I don't even think Jesus has a decent beard in a lot of those pictures, does he? It's kind of a little scruffy. Who drew it? Yeah. Big gold circle behind his head. I think. So, yeah, that's a good point. These guys have been gone a long time. Moses has been dead for 4,000 years. Is that about right? 3,000 years? Is that all? Longer than that? I don't know. A long time. A long time. Nobody around has seen either one of these guys. That could be. Could be subtitles down below. Jesus appears. Elijah appears. Moses has still got his staff. He's holding it up like this, and he knew it was him. Elijah's got this chariot of fire he's still sitting in. Revealed. It have to. Yeah. They didn't take a picture, put it on Twitter. We all see this, and we all know what this is. I mean, you would today, right? Get the camera in your pocket, put that on Facebook. One of my friends will know what I'm seeing. But no, it had to be the Spirit. You're right. These guys have been dead for a long time. Nobody's seen them. Nobody knows anybody that's seen them. There are no witnesses. There's nobody at all. So it had to be God's hand in all this too. Pick it up in Mark 9, verses 5 and 6. And Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make these tents. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." For he did not know what to say, for they were terrified. So it says he didn't know what to say. What did Peter know about the significance of what he saw? It was big. I don't know if he knew anything more than that, but he wants to build tabernacles, tents. He wants to build booths. He wants to honor these guys. Yeah, because that's the next step. They're gone. Yeah, and this isn't, Jesus walks up as a man, he's transfigured, and all of a sudden his clothes are absolutely white, he glows like the sun. Moses and Elijah appear, and this isn't like Star Wars where Yoda shows up, when there's a ghost. These guys aren't ghosts, it doesn't even appear, because he wants to build them a tent. Let's build you a place to let you stay. Let's build you a place where we can worship. That seems to be what it is. They were in their man form, some kind of strange man form, I would assume, but still I would assume in a man form, not a ghost form. Does that make sense? Katrina? Yeah. Quick studies, anyways. For ex-fishermen, they're quick studies. Yeah.
But now we're back to
rabbi, back to teacher.
Peter's always a man of action. He sees something, I gotta do something.
Yeah.
First thing to his mind is,
Yeah, that's a good point. But like I say, you would almost think he already called him Messiah within the last week. He sees this, something big is about to happen. I think I'm with you. I think that term Messiah would come to hit mine first. But yeah, rabbi's a little different. But I think some of us have. We got different names for people, and we use those. I like to use the fact that, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, and I'm a son all at the same time, and I get referred to differently in each of those roles. But yeah, this is... I don't know that that's a role I would have called him teacher, though. I'm with you. It was strange being with William yesterday, and people were calling him Elder Sands. So they all called him Elder Sands. And it's like, it was Will. And there's like, I just call him William. So, he's an elder, but it's like, I never called him Elder Sands. It was different. Though he trembled at the fellowship of Moses and Elijah, he also realized the blessedness of it. He could not let them depart without an effort to detain them. By thus speaking, he placed Jesus upon the same level with Moses and Elijah, all three alike, being worthy of a booth. And that comes from the fourfold gospel, McGarvey and Pendleton. If you've never heard of that book, it's a good book. It takes the four gospel accounts and basically puts them, interleaves them, so you have a start to finish gospel. It's a pretty neat book. It's put together really neat. Rather than reading four accounts separately, at least puts them in some kind of a timeline. So that's not always the best. Some of that stuff's arguable, but it's a pretty neat book. Picking up Mark 9, 7 through 8, and a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of this cloud, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." And suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone with them but Jesus only. How did God intervene to show that Jesus wasn't just on the same level as Moses and Elijah? The guys, they said, "You're the same level as those guys." And the guy goes, "No, I don't think so." Well, how did he do it? Those guys just disappeared, right? And it's just Jesus. This is my son. Yeah, you got a special place with that, you know? That's a good point. With Grant on my soccer team, he's just a kid on my team. I treat him like just a kid on my team. Until somebody crumbles him up, piles him up in the ground, and then don't forget, that's my son, you know? So it's a little different. I think I've only had to carry him off the field once. I've had to carry Shunti off the field several times. But they like to trip him up and carry him off. But it's a little different. They just disappear. So where have we heard God's statement before? Similar to this, and what did he add this time? "This is my son, this is my beloved son." Baptism. That's when we've heard this before. Now that we got the whole story, you know, we've got this. It's easy to see it. Okay, yeah, it's the same. So what does he add? Yeah, that's what he had in the baptism, "with whom I'm well pleased." What's he add this time? Oh, yeah, listen to him. Listen to him. "This is my son. Listen to him. I've put him in charge. I've given him that authority. Listen to him." It's three words. It's a simple one, but you could miss that. But some of the things I know that are arguable, some of the things people argue, come out of Jesus' mouth. You know, they're in red ink in a lot of Bibles. And people argue that, and it's like, you can't argue that part. You can argue the interpretation of some stuff, but man, if it came out of his mouth, I don't know that you can argue that. Did you see recently where the Pope wants to change the Lord's Prayer? What was it? "Deliver us not into temptation." That line? The Pope says that doesn't sound like God. God doesn't deliver people into temptation. You know, they ask Jesus, "How do we pray?" And he gives them this. You know, how can you argue with what Jesus said? I don't know how you can argue with that. You know, you can look around it, but don't try to change that sentence. That's him. He's got a whole lot more money than I have. But anyways, I don't know you could argue with that kind of stuff. Wow. Yeah, so you're going to use this as four books and a couple things in Acts? Yeah, then Jesus refers to, how many of the Psalms does he refer to? How many prophecies does he refer to? Now you can't throw them out. We've already got those too. It's amazing what people will do to satisfy themselves. And that's, I think that's really where it is. But what is justify themselves? They have itching ears. What is it, Hank? They got itching ears, and they will find people to say what they want them to say. Something like that? Yeah. This confirmed his divine mission. In the presence of Moses, the lawgiver, and Elijah, the head of prophets, God pointed out Jesus and declared that he was his son and he should now be heard. In this impressive way, God declares the near end of the law and the prophets and gives emphasis to the beginning of the authority of the Lord Jesus on earth. And that comes from H. Leo Bowles. So how did the scene change after God spoke? After he says, "This is my beloved son, listen to him," how does the scene change? I guess we already kind of covered that. It's just Jesus. Everything else is gone. It's just him. There is no, the prophets are gone. The law is gone. It's just Jesus. In verse 9, as they were coming down the mountain, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So what was Jesus' instruction to Peter, James, and John? Don't tell anybody. You saw this? Chuck. It was a cloud. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point right there. Yeah, that's a good point. Still noted. They wrote it down. they wrote it down. All right, so the instruction is don't tell anybody. So many times Jesus tells his apostles, the disciples, the people he heals, don't tell anybody. How come? When that seems to be our mission here, the mission we have is tell everybody. But their assignment was don't tell anybody. How come? Yeah, at this point, it could have derailed the crucifixion. Yeah, and actually, I've got somebody's comment on that. Yeah, Jesus' particular understanding of the messianic role was so different from what was popularly held that a public declaration of his messiahship could only cause confusion and misunderstanding. Telling others what happened at the transfiguration before Jesus' resurrection would also cause confusion, for the way of vindication and glory for the Son of Man was via the suffering on the cross. Robert H. Stein, his commentary on Luke. And put it in real English instead of theologian's English, it would have derailed the crucifixion. You know, Peter tries that same way. No way, you're not taking him. Here's my sword, let me chop off your ear. You know, no, I won't have it that my friend will suffer on the cross. This doesn't make any sense. The Messiah we're looking for is going to be what?
Super David,
yeah. A king, a warrior. He's going to kick out the Romans. He's going to fix the problems. Would it make any sense that they're going to arrest him? Would it make any sense that he's going to, they're going to take his clothes? Would it make any sense that they're going to put him through 6 trials, beat him, hang him on a cross with 2 thieves, or 2 robbers, or 2 guys who start rebellions, however you want to look at it?
Make any sense that
they're going to release murder or not? Yeah. Barabbas? Really? Yeah. If they had thought that, if they'd known he was Messiah, even if it had gotten through all that stuff, and like you say, who do you want me to release? Yeah. But if the crowd knew he was Messiah, they might not have said, release Barabbas. Release Jesus. Wouldn't they have stood there and yelled, crucify him? Not if they knew. Not if they knew. And that's it. It would have derailed that. So how long were they supposed to keep silent? I can keep a secret about so long, okay? As being an elder, that means don't come telling me everything. No, I'm just joking. secrets are hard to keep. I think everybody can know that. Something a secret like this, dude, you should have seen what I saw. I saw Elijah, I saw Moses, I saw it glowing like this. Can you keep that to yourself? You know, I shared a picture of a bobcat with you, okay? As cool as that is to me, it's not the biggest deal to most people, okay? But you see something like that, would you share it? No, keep quiet. How long? Till he raises from the dead. Charge coming on him until the Son of Man has risen from the dead. Number of people they've seen risen from the dead at this point? Not yet. Yeah. But that's later, I would think. That's John 11, Lazarus. But yeah, the Son. Fill volumes. That's the next point. If you're the Messiah, like we just declared this, and we just saw you, Messiah, if you're going to die, the invincible super king, how can he die? Before we do. Yes, yeah, before we do. I can keep the secret until after you die. What's going to be left after the super king, the invincible super king dies, what's going to be left? It's like, well, if you're set to watch the Avengers movie, since I have a teenage son, we will see the new Avengers movie. But superheroes will die in this movie, okay? It's already been stated that superheroes will die. Superheroes don't die, you know, let alone the Messiah, okay? And the Messiah is real. He can't die. So this has got to be going through their head. You know, some of this stuff just don't make sense. And it's, you know, it's one statement after another. They didn't have time to talk about it like we did. John, did you hear him? Did you write that down? Put that in your little book you've been keeping. You know, keep this secret. Put a little asterisk next to it. Highlight it in pink.
It's like that statement you didn't register. It's the very next thing you're asking about.
Yeah. You're right. We'll go on that. Doom, doom, doom. And then they ask him, why do scribes say that first Elijah must come? They've got 1,001 questions. Where do we start? Where do we start? I'm going to back up because I got, you know, why wouldn't they question Jesus rising from the dead? Because it says they question it. Is it their lack of understanding? They ever saw anything like that before? It's just crazy, misconceptions? Anyways, we kind of discussed that, but that's really the key. They've got a lot of questions. And the question they ask, isn't Elijah supposed to come first? Why did they ask him? That's my question. Although they did not ask Jesus about the resurrection, ask him that. Why ask him that? Didn't they just see Elijah? Didn't Jesus already say Elijah was John the Baptist? Did they miss something? Huh?
They did not recognize.
Or sensory overload. They saw too much stuff and they forgot it. Yeah. He was here.
He
remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they saw it. They, anyways. Knowing a prophecy, it makes sense. Does it make sense? Anyways. Does it make sense? Knowing the prophecy, knowing Elijah must come first, they just saw Elijah, and they knew John the Baptist was Elijah. If we got to keep this whole thing a secret, why can't we at least tell people we just saw Elijah? Everybody's looking for him. Even if they missed the John the Baptist thing, they're looking for this. Can't we tell that part? Nope, got to keep it all a secret. Verse 12, he said to them, Elijah does come first to restore all things, and how it is written of the Son of Man that he should suffer many things and be treated with contempt. But I tell you, Elijah has come. They did to him whatever they pleased, as it is written of him. And Matthew's account says, but I tell you that Elijah has already come. They did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they pleased. So also the Son of Man will suffer, certainly suffer it in their hands. Then the disciples understood that he was speaking to them, John the Baptist. And as we know, John the Baptist was imprisoned and his head was chopped off as a party favor. So Jesus says, same kind of stuff's going to happen to me. If it happened to him, it's going to happen to me. He suffered, I'm going to suffer. And the last part of this lesson, which I really don't know why the book tied it in the first part of this lesson, other than that, hey, let's fill in a few minutes here. Matthew, sometimes I swear they put in the weirdest stuff in here. I don't know. Matthew 27, 45 through 47. Now from the sixth hour, there was darkness all over the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice saying, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, this man is calling Elijah. They didn't recognize. Yeah, they didn't recognize that John the Baptist was Elijah. Yeah, they didn't recognize it. There's still people there at the cross. They still hadn't, we didn't see him, you know. Chuck? Yeah. Yeah, and they're at that point. They are poisoned. They've already yelled, crucify him. They've watched the trials. They've seen him scourged. They're hardened. Yeah. We back up, we have to acknowledge all this stuff. And none of it goes together with what they want to be thinking at that time. In verse 48, And one of them at once ran and took a sponge filled with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. Anyways, they were, some of the ones are still holding out that Elijah would come right now and save this guy, save the guy who was the Messiah, which ain't going to cut it either. So that's it. That's the lesson. As great as Elijah was, he couldn't compare it to Jesus. And that's where I'm going to leave it. Next week, it's the back end of a bobcat, in case you hadn't seen one. Yeah, like I said, drive the truck. If it attacks me, that's a good sign. Elijah is an example. Luke, Romans, and James, and Chuck will teach next week. And that will finish our study on Elijah. And we're going to the books of poetry from there. So, all right, thank you all.